So let me also say that how many of you, this is for you one of your first APHA meetings? Oh, my goodness, quite a number of people. Congratulations on being here. My first APHA meeting was here in San Francisco in the late 1970s. And one of the ways that I got welcomed into APHA was through the Latino Caucus. And so if you're feeling kind of lost, sometimes the caucuses and the SPIGs and certainly the sections are a wonderful way to get oriented. Henry Montes is in the room and was one of the leaders in the Latino Caucus over the many years and helped me find my way. So thank you, Henry. I also want to acknowledge that in 2003 was the last time APHA was here in San Francisco. I remember it well because the Schwarzenegger administration was just starting up, and I was on my way out, John, as Director of Health Services for the state of California. Grantland Johnson, who was the Secretary of Health, and I looked over many accomplishments in the 4.5 years that we served under Governor Gray Davis, such things as dealing with 9/11, increasing 1 million children on Healthy Families and Medi-Cal, being able to institute the first national nurse ratios in hospitals were tremendous accomplishments. But people ask me, was there anything that you felt was missing in that time? And my response is always, yes. I felt a deep sense of loss that we didn't make enough progress on issues of health equity. Both Grantland and I knew that in the second term of an administration, you can get away with a lot more than in the first term. And so we had really planned this trajectory to do enormous work in the state of California to ensure that there was more equity, and our term was cut short. But when one door closes, another opens, and my history at Kaiser Permanente over the last 7 years has been then to have other opportunities to look at these issues. So I was really gratified to be able to be one of the instigators of a $5 million grant to establish the UCLA Kaiser Permanente Center for Health Equity at the Jonathan Fielding School of Public Health at UCLA. So it was a good start, and now I'm at the California Wellness Foundation and being able to move the agenda even further. So today I'm going to talk from my lens of all of 10 months of being at the foundation, not very long, but we have embarked upon a strategic planning process now that's very important to our work. The mission of the organization is listed here in terms of improving the health of the people of California by making grants for health promotion, wellness education, and disease prevention. And we, by the numbers, have had historically some wonderful wins in terms of what the foundation has been able to accomplish. In this strategic planning process that we've just embarked upon, we're getting ready for our next cycle of funding in the foundation, which will begin in January of 2015. Now, I probably have a lot of grantees here in the audience, and I don't want to make them nervous by, listing 10 new ideas. So instead, I'm going to be talking about the 8 areas that we have concentrated attention on, and then maybe sort of pushing us to think about how might we tweak those particular areas and look at some new things that we might fund. So for instance, in the area of women's health, we've done an extraordinary job looking at the disparities that we see in California in terms of issues of health equity for women. But when you think about the number of women veterans who will be returning from war, this is the first time that our country has really had this experience. And we really don't know what are the issues that women might be facing to reintegrate with their families. So in this first funding docket in December, the board is seeing a recommendation from staff to spend an allocation of $1 million to really look at this area to fortify those veterans organizations and women's organizations to be able to offer more support. California has the highest number of women veterans who will be returning, so we want to really focus on this as well. Well, these are the areas that we've had our concentration here in California, You can see that it's been a very robust area with a focus that in the beginning was on violence prevention and teen pregnancy. We've addressed four goals: the provision of direct services through health promotion, disease prevention, and wellness education. At least 50% of our grant money supports direct services, and we have been informing policymakers and opinion leaders, sustaining the capacity of the healthcare safety net, and recognizing and encouraging leaders as well. 75% of the California Wellness Foundation grants are to minority-serving organizations. 75%. Two-thirds of our board are people of color, and more than 50% of the staff is diverse. So we're on the right track. So let me describe some of the work that we're doing, and I want to put this in context of the issues that we're facing, some of our strategies that we've done, and then, as I said, how we're hoping to create some more health equity. In the area of violence prevention, we've given more than $118 million to support grantees' efforts to build a movement that defines violence against youth as a public health issue, one that is preventable. We began the work 20 years ago, the first major philanthropic organization in the nation to embrace a public health model for violence prevention. It was called the Decade of Death because of the number of young people. 1,400 young people were dying every year. In the last 20 years, we've seen a 42% decrease in these numbers of deaths. So you know that we've been making progress, not just at the foundation, but throughout the country in really identifying this. And it shows the power of a public health approach as well. We talked a little bit in some of the previous presentations here about diversity and the importance in the health professions. This is actually a photograph of our latest honorees, individuals who have dedicated their life to ensuring that we have a diverse workforce. Dr. Trotman and I are both graduates of Bronx Community College. And why is that important? It's important because you see here a Latina, an African-American man from the Bronx, who really wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Bronx Community College. And we're seeing our community college systems eroded. When I attended as a nursing student, there was no cost to attend community college, zero tuition. The dormitory was provided free of costs because they knew, as young women living in the South Central Bronx area, we could not afford to go into a dormitory and we couldn't study at home with the chaos frequently in our households. We paid for uniforms and we paid for books. And I wouldn't be here today without that kind of investment. So we need to keep investing. We need to be able to say to our young people, the trajectory to a doctorate degree isn't all the times a direct line through the various educational institutions. Sometimes there are stops along the way. And those stops are important because you pick up life experiences that make you a better individual and a better leader. So this investment by the foundation will continue to be one of our most important endeavors. And we're looking at ways in which we can really work with young people as well so that they'll get the math and they'll get the sciences early that they need in order to succeed. Healthy aging, don't they look healthy? I love this. It reminds me of kind of a Florida look here. So, this is really an important area. We've invested in a elder economic index. We were looking at the fact that seniors and looking at the poverty levels and looking at the federal standards, it didn't give us enough context of what was going on. So we developed through some of our research, some of our work, being able to index, and you see this here on this diagram, so that you're looking at where does the senior live? If they live in San Francisco, the cost of rent, the cost of food is going to be higher. If you live in Los Angeles, the cost of transportation is going to be much higher than it is here in the Bay Area. So these are all factors that you need to take into consideration in terms of looking at the eligibility of seniors for programs to assist them. Now, we also know that in 2013, California, along with 14 other states, will launch a demonstration project under the ACA to transform how care is provided to low-income Californians who are dually enrolled in the Medicare and Medicaid programs. Nearly 600,000 dual-eligible Californians will be impacted. That's a heck of a lot of people. The majority of dual-eligible seniors are people of color, a significant portion who are immigrants and or limited English proficiency. So the concerns for implementation are about making quick timelines for transition into Medi-Cal managed care programs, the likely need of many of the seniors to change their physicians, insufficient cultural competency in communicating the transition process, and it may result in interruptions to primary care, therefore leading to more emergency room visits. So this is where we can help as a foundation in terms of statewide network of benefit counselors and legal advocates to reduce confusion about benefits, coverage, engage the administrative and legal systems to secure benefits and discern broader system change issues as well. In the area of environmental health, I wanted to show you this because this is some of the areas that I think that public health has made tremendous gains on and that we as a foundation can support as well. To have more and more GIS mapping to look at where do people live, work, and play? What are the consequences to their health of being close to a rail station that's going by, trains that are going by, to living close to the port, to other factors in our communities? And so we know more and more, no matter where you live in the United States, you're probably close to some industrial area that we need to be very mindful of in terms of what will be the impacts on health. So this is looking at green zones in neighborhoods such as Boyle Heights, Pacoma, and Wilmington in the Southern California area. And we will continue to make grants to organizations such as the California Project for Civil Engagement that will allow these types of resources to be available to all nonprofit institutions. In the area of mental health, we have been funding grants such as to the California Youth Connection for advocacy for foster youth and youth emancipating from the foster system, and they testify before commissions and legislative committees. What we're showing here is that if you think about the censuses that are done for homeless population, think about if you were a homeless teenager. That census would not pick you up. You're not going to be necessarily under a bridge. You're going to be trying to stay at somebody else's house or in a garage or in some other areas on the street where you're going to be hidden. So we're going to need to make more of this attempt to have these changes so that we can have point-in-time surveys that get out and that recognize the different kinds of problems that teenagers are facing as well. Teen pregnancy, we've had a tremendous history with being able to address the fact that teen mothers who have repeat pregnancies before finishing high school are less likely to graduate. And so our strategies right now need to change as our young women and the fathers of their babies need attention that has changed as the demographics has changed. These problems have been lessened, but they have not gone away, and I'm particularly mindful that for Latinas, this still continues. 40,000 young women in California who continue to get pregnant as teenagers. Lastly, I'm going to just focus on very quickly on the fact that women's health, as I mentioned, in terms of women's veterans, we need certainly to know that women of color experience higher rates of many chronic conditions and data document disparities in numerous health outcomes. And so we have in front of us many things that we need to take care of. The last areas then are in terms of work and health, and what we can do in terms of ensuring additional health coverage for so many uninsured, and that's where ACA is so very crucial. I expect that even in California, we will forge on no matter what happens. We also know that we need to look at special projects, that areas that don't fall neatly into some of these eight areas that I mentioned, so that we have the capacity to look at other areas in terms of what communities are telling us are needs that are unfulfilled. We are very rigorous in terms of our evaluation process and being able, through evaluation, to look at the fact that we've had responsive grant making, the success of that in not telling an institution you must fit into an initiative mold, but rather saying if you need ongoing money to support your institution, we honor that, respect that, particularly in a time of recession that's been so very difficult for organizations to move on. This is the latest study that we've done by Harder & Company here in the Bay Area, and it really supports this premise as well. Well, I'll end on that note because it is one of success. You have my information to contact me as well. It's always a pleasure to be here. I think the best thing that we can do, all of us, is to honor the legacy and the spirit of Dr. Breslow and Dr. Brown. And we can do that every day by rededicating ourselves to ensuring that in our lifetime that we will see health equity. Thank you so very much.